December 16th, 1999, Thursday, the Absolute Monastery. Our topic today is remembering. Remembering. What sort of things do we remember? Do we remember happy things, joyous things, sad things, remarkable things? What do we remember? What makes us happy? We have a song that we like to sing from our Joy Song book. It's Wonderful Memory, and it goes like this. I have such a wonderful memory. I have such a wonderful mind. I have such a wonderful memory. I have such a wonderful mind. I am God, I am God, I have such a wonderful memory. I am God, I am God, I have such a wonderful mind. I have such a wonderful memory. I have such a wonderful mind. I have such a wonderful memory. I have such a wonderful mind. I am God, I am God, I have such a wonderful memory. I am God, I am God, I have such a wonderful mind. We have this great capacity within us. We have this great awareness within us of our wonderful mind and our wonderful memory. But do we really appreciate it? Do we really recognize it? Do we really call it forth? Well, not always. The reason that we don't call it forth is because we say we forget. We are concentrating on the things we're doing at the moment. Now, we've talked about sort of speed memory, like the time that I was rolling under the water in a riptide, and all of a sudden my whole life was flashing before me, and I was remembering every single little incident. I didn't remember that I remembered it all, it's just that I remembered a lot of the things that I saw in that quick instant. And I saw them all in beautiful color, and complete, in detail. Anything that I stopped to think, to remember, was just really a very busy time, really very active. Our mind has everything that we have ever experienced in it. But we don't want to stop there, because our mind has everything that we experienced in it, and our mind is the universal mind, which has every single experience that has ever been thought, was thought, will be thought on the face of the earth, or in the universe, in the allness. Now, we find it very difficult to conceive that we know everything in the universe, that we know all things wherever they may be. It's very difficult for us to conceive that, because we sometimes don't even remember people's names. We hear what people's names are, and then immediately we forget. And we know, but we tell ourselves we forget. We know everything that's going on in the universe, but we tell ourselves we forget. We know everything of our past, and we know every memory we've ever had in our past, we know every experience we've ever had in our past, and we say we don't know. We say we don't remember. How very foolish. Now, why are we saying we don't remember? We are saying we don't remember because we don't want to remember. This is the essence of all memory. The choice to remember. You say, well, I would remember these things if I could remember them, it's just that I can't remember them. Well, of course, you can't remember them. And you think you can't remember them. But don't forget, you're not alone on this boat. You have a lot of companions, each one who says to you, I don't remember the past. I don't remember yesterday. When you get older, you remember less. And when you're younger, you have no memory to remember. How silly. How absolutely silly. Like the little boy who said to his baby sister, he said, quick, tell me before they make you forget. What's God like? Well, quick, tell me before they make you forget. What is all the information of the universe? What is everything? We have our friend Stephen Hawking, who is writing these most remarkable books on science, on cosmology, on the cosmic life of all, and on how the space continuum is formed. A brain unequaled. And yet, he has a body that's very limited. But his mind is soaring. His mind is roaring into all of these areas as we can. I tell you, let your imagination run wild. Let your imagination just take off. And if you let your imagination take off, you know what will happen? All of a sudden, you'll think things, know things, say things, do things that you never dreamed were possible. You will let your heart go, you'll let your mind go, you'll let your imagination go. You'll enter into all sorts of things that you had no idea about. Absolutely no idea about. But you knew it. You knew it because it's you. You knew it because it is what your inner consciousness has always held. Everything. When we soar in our consciousness with unlimited imagination, we open the doorways within us to reaches that we have never even dreamed of approaching, but they're there. They're there, eagerly there, waiting for us to participate in them, waiting for us to get excited about them, waiting for us to have fun with them. Really. Just waiting for us to do these things. And what are we doing? We're sitting back and saying, well, I don't remember. And, ha, that imagination stuff, that's for idiots. That's for people who aren't very sound in their head. Because, you know, that's not what life is all about. Life is hard knocks. Life is these definite facts. These things you can put your hand on, that you can touch. Really? What is poetry? Poetry is something that lifts the spirit. It doesn't really say anything factual, but it is a feeling. It's an emotion. And what's music? Music is so nebulous, but yet it takes the spirit of the mind and the body and makes it soar and makes it have value, makes it have purpose for living. And what are kind words? Kind words that are said in a time of need in a person's life, they're like a balm, like a gentle breath of heaven saturating the circumstances and the person. Thank you, I needed that. Now, they could have given it to themselves. You could give it to yourself. You know all things. You remember all things. You are all things. Why don't we do it? Because we have trained ourselves not to. So, here in the School of the Masters, here in the Absolute Monastery, here in our program that we are doing, the never-ending program, we are opening our consciousness to the unlimited. Now, Greg said the other day, well, if I were in the program, Herb would probably ask me to go give a talk. And what do you think he wants to do? He wants to go give a talk. He wouldn't have brought the subject up if he didn't want to. All he has to do is, you know what Herb would do? Herb would tell me to go skiing. Herb would tell me to go and go take a sailboat and go out in the ocean. Herb would tell me to go scuba diving. Herb would tell me to go doing all the fun stuff. Hey, how about that? And you know what? Herb would join him. Herb likes those things just as much as anyone else. Why say anything that you don't really want to experience? Because you really do want to experience it. And this is the game we play with ourselves. We play with ourselves that we don't want to do it. Ellen said to me, I don't want to translate. I don't want to be a translator. And then after she got to be a translator, she says, this is fun. This is great. And then she heard other translators translating me and sort of presuming what I was going to say, and saying things before I even said them. And she said, oh, that's terrible. And then the next thing you know, she's doing it too. Because it is natural. It is natural to flow with ideas, to flow with preconceived concepts and go with them. But she had so much fun doing that, and she couldn't wait to get up in the morning to be ready for the seminar. She couldn't wait to tell her friends that she's going to be speaking in German, French, Italian, English, and Norwegian, Spanish, and who knows what else, and Nigerian. And Nigerian, that was fun, wasn't it? But you see, then she says, oh, I can work with her, but I don't know if I can ever stand up and say something myself, you know, alone, oh my goodness sakes. And what's the first thing she did? She got up, spoke alone. And the people, what did they say? Boo, boo, no. They said, more. She said, what did I tell them? I said, let your mind fly. I said, if we always teach like Socrates, we will never run out of things to say. Because Socrates merely spoke to the hearts of the individuals on what they were interested in. If Socrates said to a person, well, how was your day today? Oh, it was a terrible day. I had to do all these things. How did you handle them? Well, I did this and that. Do you think you did a good job? Oh, I did an excellent job, or I could have done a little better. How could you have done it better? Well, I could have done it better by doing this. Well, now, if you had done it better, do you think that it would have made that person's life a little richer? Yes, it would have. It would have, because, you see, then they would have looked at it from this point of view. Well, are you going to do that in the future? You know, do it better? Well, of course. Every time I do it better. Well, do you frown upon yourself for not doing it as well as you can while you're learning how to do it better? Well, no, of course not. Well, then, what kind of day do you have? I had a wonderful day. I had a very satisfying day. You see, let their own ideas be the content of your talk. Let their own ideas be the content. That's what they want to hear anyhow. And you may as well be a blessing in their life, lifting their own thoughts to the height that their own thoughts would like to have, only they think in false humility that they shut themselves down because they didn't do their best. We're always doing our best at that moment. We're always aspiring for better. Now, this is the tough part. This is the tough part in memory. This is the part that tears everyone to pieces in memory. All time is now. If all time is now, then all memory is now. All experiences are now. Everything is happening right now. All time is right now. So what I did when I was a little child, I'm doing right now. What I'm doing when I am another 1,000 years old, I'm doing right now. What I'm doing on other dimensions, and I'm doing them on thousands of other dimensions, millions of other dimensions perhaps, I'm doing right now. Can I tune in to these other dimensions and be aware of them? I'm not only tuned in, I'm there. I have tuned them out. I have tuned them out because I didn't want to confuse myself with this particular level of consciousness that I'm on. And on that dimension, I have tuned this out so that I would be consistent there. You follow that? It's almost unbelievable. It's something beyond what we can conceive for ourselves, but it's true. It's very true. Our memory encompasses all, because all is right now. Memory, perhaps, is a poor word for it. Memory seems to say something past. But there is nothing past. There is nothing past. If anyone ever speaks about what happened in the past, they are speaking about it in the present, and they are pointing it out in the present and reliving it in the present from whatever point of view they may have had. Let's take an illustration. You were playing soccer, Stefan. You were playing soccer, and you were the shrimp. You were the little guy. And the other guys on the team looked at you and said, what value can this little shrimp be? And so you had to get in there and show them more dramatically, more powerfully, more skillfully how good you were than if you were their size and their experience, right? So you went in there and you were a whizzy-diz. You went there, you did all the stupid, crazy things that no one else would have dared to do, and you were untouched because you had a purpose in mind. You weren't trying to be bad. You were just trying to be very, very good. And so you raced here and you raced there. And the guy said, wow, what a little dynamo. He may be little, but he is dynamite. And they wanted you on their team. And they took you on their team. And you were on their team, and you proved yourself as a very fantastic soccer player. But when you think about it now, you are thinking about it now, even though you say it happened back then. Can you see yourself as a little shrimp in the locker room with all those naked guys? And thinking to yourself, gee, look, they got pubic hairs and other things like this, and I haven't even got that yet. I haven't got the hair on my chest, I'm nothing, you know. And here these guys are big, burly guys, you know. They're all high school kids and seniors and whatever, you know. And here he's a shrimp. But how long did that thought last? But a moment. After they played their funny games with you and, you know, initiated you to the fact that, you know, you're a boy and you're growing up and you're doing fine, after you got over that, then it was all forgotten. That was just like a point in memory, a point in time where you had your coming of age a little earlier. And that was beautiful. That was beautiful. He remembers it. He remembers a lot of things that he's never telling us anything about. But he remembers these things, and they're beautiful. But what they are is they are now in his life. He smiles about them now. He thinks about them now. And he thinks how terrified he was at the time he was going through these initiation experiences. But the thing is, he's thinking about them now. And now he's thinking, I did that pretty good. I handled that pretty well. They really saw how good I was, and they wanted me, but they wanted to make sure that I knew that I was the littlest punk on the team, and that they're the big ones. And that's okay. But you see, the memory is now. The memory is now, and all of those things that happened are now. And as he looks at them from his perspective of now, he sees them with a great deal more dignity and a great deal less fear and a great deal less anticipation, but more accepting. And this is what all of us do. You can go to any point in time and live it in the now. You can bring any memory of what's going to happen 10 years from now, 50 years from now, or 10 years past. You can bring any memory. They're all memories. You can have what's going to happen in the next 10 minutes, too. You take any memory and make it now. And as you make it now, you're going to be looking at it from an objective point of view. You're going to be looking at it from who you are now. Now, that may be limiting. If you look into what's called the future now, and you haven't had the growing experiences to prepare you for it, and you look at it and you say, huh, that's way out. That's something very strange. It's something very difficult to conceive for me. But then you stop that, and you say, I know that I know that I know. And then you know what happens? The time lapse from here to the point in the future, if I can use that term, the time lapse from here to the future is all there. You now have the maturity that you have in the future when you are experiencing this experience now, and you are observing it with that maturity. You are observing the future now with the maturity you have in the future. What did we just say? Stefan is observing the past when he was being initiated onto the soccer teams with the maturity that he has today. He's not observing the past with the immaturity he had at that time, but he's observing it with where he stands today. Now, as I'm pointing these things out to you, you're getting a little bit of a picture. You're getting a little bit of a picture of how memory works. And memory is really a beautiful program if we will allow ourselves to utilize it. If we will allow ourselves to recognize that remembering is not thinking of something that's past, but rather thinking of something in the present. And you can do that anytime you want. Our minds have the capacity of thinking an infinite number of things and do think an infinite number of things all at the same moment. Just as we are capable of doing many things at the same moment. Remember our illustration about the car. We get in the car, we set the mirror, we set the seat, and then we start driving. And we tune the radio while we're driving. We turn on the windshield washers while we're driving. We flash the bright and dim lights while we're driving, always remembering to be on dim when other cars are coming. We drive perfectly at all times. We watch the speed limit. We know when there's a policeman behind us and when there's a policeman before us so that we will not shake their boat. And we are always doing everything honorably and perfectly and peacefully and harmoniously. And then we're talking to someone in the front seat. And we're even turning our head and talking to someone in the back seat. And sometimes if we're going to drive into a truck, an angel takes the wheel and turns it for us, you know. Like, what's the name of the show? The Bishop's Wife? Yes. So, you see, these things are not as strange as they may seem. These things are quite real. They're quite things that have happened regularly to us, but you're not alert to them. You don't appreciate it. Oh, my God. I steered out of the way of trouble. Oh, my goodness. I slowed down without thinking about it just in time, without thinking about it. Precognition. What is precognition? Knowledge of something that's going to happen in the future, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you ever have precognition? Knowledge of what's going to happen in the future. Memory of what's going to happen in the future. Precognition. To understand, to comprehend, to know what's going to happen in the future. You see, it's a memory. And so your precognition is not knowing something you don't know. It's knowing something you know, but something that you are putting in a perspective. You're putting it in the tomorrow or a few days later. But precognition is merely being aware now of what we're thinking then and how we're acting then. Are your thoughts eternally yours? Are your emotions eternally yours? In the story of Jesus, the Bible has Jesus doing a great many things. And it's true, Jesus is a man of many virtues and many talents. But the thing about Jesus is that he is consistent with his nature, I believe. And if Jesus is consistent with his nature, anything the Bible has him doing inconsistent with his nature is not what he did. Now, this is my categorical statement. In the Bible, the people who wrote about Jesus were not necessarily people who knew Jesus, because they're writing some 60 years later, according to the records that we are aware of. And so it would seem to say that the people, oh, for instance, Sidica is telling out her experience with Jesus. And Sidica is saying that when she was with Jesus, he gave to everybody. He was loving to everybody. He was sharing with everybody. He wanted to do nice things for everybody. And people would come up and say, I have my broken leg. And he would say, well, what do you want me to do? Because he could not conceive of anyone having anything they didn't want. how one speck of God's substance could cling to another speck of God's substance where it's not wanted was not within the ken of Jesus. And so he said, what wouldst thou of me? And then the person said, well, I'd be made whole and perfect. So it is. Or, I've got a broken leg. Well, you want two of them? And that seems silly, but it's real. That is the simplicity of the way Jesus' mind worked. Jesus did not judge. May I say that again? Jesus did not judge. He didn't say, you are terrible. Even to the woman at the well. He says, hey, you want to run with other wives' husbands? They'll run you out of town. And that's just the way it is. There's nothing bad, nothing good about that. That's just the program. A woman who comes in and is a harlot and taking over the husbands of the men of the community, the women aren't going to stand for it. The men don't care, obviously, you know. But the women aren't going to stand for it. But who's going to stone the woman who is being the harlot? The men. That's just the game they play. Now, Jesus didn't say, that's bad, you shouldn't do that. He just said, it's a sin in the eyes of the community, and so go and sin no more. Don't do that anymore. And so, then what is he going to do? What is she going to do? If she wants to have a good show, she'll stop. If she doesn't, she will continue. Now, did Jesus know? Hey, Jesus said, look, you've had a dozen men who are not your husbands. And you've done this and you've done it. He didn't say, you terrible person, you had a dozen men without marriage and things like that. He didn't say that. He, at no point did he judge. At no point. And when they say he threw the money changers out of the temple, it's quite likely that another situation occurred there, and it wasn't really he. He had around him a bunch of clowns called disciples. And Peter was a clown who wanted to shut off his eye and cut off the ear. And he said, no, we're not doing that. And he put the ear back. Imagine what these disciples did in Jesus' name that were not consistent with what Jesus was. If Peter even carried a sword, how inconsistent was that with the teaching of Jesus? He said, my kingdom is not of this world. I am not here to take control of the nation, to take control of a government, to take control of a people. I am here to show the way to the inner man. So, whenever these additions are put in there of Jesus chasing out the money changers, of Jesus doing other things that I don't even recall that he does, but they had him doing a lot of silly things. And he didn't do that. It was not his nature. But we remembered it as his nature. When Seneca was back there walking around with Jesus as she was playing the role of Mary, she had a big desire in her heart to marry Jesus. Oh, well, wouldn't he make a wonderful husband? Oh, wouldn't he be wonderful? I just love to be with him. And Jesus said, hey, that's not my game right now. You know, you're a smooth lady. I appreciate you. You're wonderful. You compliment me by your request to be part of my world. But hey, I'm in a little different act right now. Why didn't he do these things? Why didn't he do this? Because they were not part of his nature. So, whenever we think of the stories of Jesus, and any of them are inconsistent with what his nature of pure, unconditional love is, it's not what he did, okay? Mm-hmm. It just cannot be. All right, now, Stephen remembers when he was a youngster how some of the older boys would kick at him in an unkindly way because they felt that he was a little runt and they really didn't want him around. And Stephen knew that they didn't want him around because he was a little runt. There are always a couple of guys like that. Now, What did Stefan do? In his mind, he said, those guys are trying to help me be a better player. Those guys are trying to help me be a better player. He doesn't even remember that they wanted him off the team because he was competition to them. He was doing the runs and the plays that they were supposed to be doing. He was taking the special credits that they were supposed to be getting. You know, people are like that. But he doesn't remember that. All he remembers is that everybody was helping him win the game. Everybody was helping him to be the best player that he could be. Everybody loved him. Even though they picked on him, that was just part of loving him too. But that was all he had in his mind. Do you understand? Now, the truth was that a lot of the guys didn't want him on the team because he was competition to them. And this is understandable, perfectly understandable. But in his naivete and his pure love, he could not see that. So he could not be unkind to them. He could not be angry in his heart to them because he did not see them doing this. Well, this is the same with Jesus. Pardon me for comparing the two of you. But this is the same with Jesus. Jesus did not realize his disciples were totally unhappy with him because he wasn't going to be the king of the Jews. Jesus did not realize, he did not care, that people wanted him to heal everybody who came along. He said, no, I am doing this for a purpose. If I heal everybody, then what's the big deal? Nobody learns to heal themselves. He said, it's done unto you according to your belief. It's done unto you according... You see, people have... The Bible is filled with the healings of Jesus, but no one reports exactly how he did it. He said, wouldst thou be made whole? Then it is done unto you. You see, our memory plays fun games with us because we like to have things done. When people go to Martha Coleman, or Martha Coleman, and a few others for healing, she's gone now, but a few others for healing, and then they say, in Jesus' name, you're healed. And they're healed, but they heal themselves. And if their healing lasts, because they remembered their original purity and integrity. If their healing doesn't last, then they think it was the healer who healed them, and they are healed only so long as they believe in that healer. If they have the slightest little ache or pain that comes along, they'll say, whoops, it's coming back again. Whereas if you have returned to your original purity and integrity, your memory of your reality of who you are, then you don't say, whoops, it's coming back. You say, I'm whole and perfect. I'm whole and perfect. Every organ, action, function in my body is whole and perfect, right? And then you remember that, and you stand on that, and you firmly affirm that, and you live it. And when you do that, then you are home free. But you see, this is what memory is all about. We teach memory courses here quite extensively. Return to your original purity and integrity. That's our whole theme. Now, what is that but memory? What is that but remembering your original purity and integrity? Ellen, what are you like as your original purity and integrity? What is it like in you to be originally pure and integral? You're whole and perfect. You have magnificent form. You have magnificent body. You have magnificent eyes, a magnificent mind, a magnificent voice. You are supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. You are just beyond words. That's what the little boy asked his sister. Quick, tell me before they make you forget, what's God like? What is the divine in us like? What is the purity of us like? What is our original purity and integrity? Do we really want to know? And of course, the answer is evident in who we are and what we're doing. If we really want to know, then we will start putting that cause in motion. And what phrase do we use when we do that? Does anyone remember? Ich weiß, dass ich weiß, dass ich weiß.
I know that I know that I know.
I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer. Now, recently, how often have you used that? Well, maybe once in a while. But ich weiß, dass ich weiß, dass ich weiß, Gott in mir ist der Antwort. So, know this for yourself. I should have said that to the girl in the hospital the other day when she was trying to speak German. Ich weiß, dass ich weiß, dass ich weiß, Gott in mir ist der Antwort. And she's like, my Gott in heaven. But this is beautiful. This is beautiful. We know all by the divine in us. We know all by the purity within us. We know all by the goodness within us. We know all by the allness that's within us. And wow, isn't that exciting? Isn't that exciting to be God? Isn't that exciting to be all? But the fun part is to remember that. The fun part is to remember who we are. And in remembering who we are, never doubt. Never say it's too good to be true. Never say, oh my goodness sakes, you know, this is beyond me. This is, if I could only speak as well as Ellen does, if I could only dance as well as Stefan does, if I could only sing as well as Sitika does, wow, I'd have it made. Well, let's put all three of you together. You do. You do. Let me ask you a question, and I will give you my answer. Who do you dance for, Stefan?
Myself.
Who do you sing for, Sitika?
Myself.
And who do you speak for, Ellen?
For myself.
Well, then you got the message.
Mm-hmm.
We only do everything for ourselves. And you know who I sound like when I sing? Pavarotti. Anzio Pinza.
Maria Lanza.
Maria Lanza. Oh, my favorite, Maria Lanza. That's who I sound like. When I get up and sing, oh, the heavens ring with the joy of my voice. And that's who I am. Now, if anyone hears me differently, they never tell me. If anyone sees me differently, they never tell me. Because I am doing it for myself. As each of us do this for ourselves, we are fabulous. We are remarkable. How many times have you seen a soccer player, for instance, who played beautiful soccer, and you were with him on every move that he's made. He's going to do this thing. He's going to do this thing. You knew what he was going to do. You were playing it right with him. And he was a top soccer player. What's his name?
Diego Maradona.
Diego Maradona. And that's just another name for Stefan Stressley. Diego Maradona. And Sitika, who is the greatest singer in your mind? You could say Sitika.
Right.
But you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whoever is your idol, who expresses it most beautifully, and who you feel, if not you alone, the world feels is the greatest coloratura of the world, the greatest soprano, the greatest alto singer, whatever, that's you. That's you. Now, Sitika, do you have trouble with this? You, watch this, you are a butterfly. Do you have trouble with that?
No.
Not at all. Not at all. Can you see what a butterfly does? A butterfly flits from flower to flower enjoying itself. A butterfly reflects the glorious sunlight. The butterfly has colors on it that are, you know, garish, terrible. They would never fit together. But on a butterfly, they're glorious. Can you visualize yourself that way? Oh, yes. And are you a butterfly? Oh, yes. The free spirit of a butterfly, with its colorful dress, its colorful costume, its colorful self, and yet it is stark naked. It adds nothing to itself other than the glory that it is, and it's beautiful. Ellen, who is the greatest woman speaker that you've ever heard, or man?
God, Ellen.
Well, that cut that one short, didn't it? Beautiful. But you see, when God Ellen gets up to speak, is God Ellen ever short for words? Is God Ellen ever looking for ideas? Is God Ellen so filled with ideas and concepts that she just wishes she could have time to get them all out? But God Ellen is such a professional. She takes one idea and develops it so the person can get it, not giving them the whole bale of hay, but giving them straw by straw so they can chew it, digest it, and claim it. And when she's done with them, they've got the whole bale. But she gives it to them straw by straw, gently, 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 letting them feel the nuances of the hay, feel the tastiness of it, feel the joy of it. Probably should take something other than hay, but taking the essence of it. As that story I told you about the farmer who went to church on a very blustery, wintry Sunday with the snow blizzards all around, and nobody else made it to church except this farmer. And as the farmer sat there with his family, the minister gave him the hour-long sermon, just the whole 10 yards. Not just 9 yards, 10 yards. And after the service, the farmer came up to the minister and he says, "Minister, that was quite a sermon. But you know, when I only find one cow in the barn, I don't give them the whole load of hay." And we don't have a response from the minister, but the minister's response is this: "My friend, you are worthy of the whole load of hay. You are worth being given the whole load." You see, this is envision this, if you will. You go to a friend's house for dinner, Thanksgiving dinner, and no one else arrives. And so the friend says, "Oh, nobody else is here. I don't feel like serving." No. The friend says, "Well, we're here. We're going to start out with a special wine, and then we're going to bring out the big turkey, which will cover the whole table, and we'll take what we want. And we'll bring out the whole bowl of sweet potatoes and the whole bowl of corn and the whole bowl of everything. And then we'll, after everything is all done with our coffee and everything, then we'll finish it up with some very special pumpkin pie or pecan pie and with ice cream on top of it and so on. Oh my goodness. Now, we don't have to eat it all. We eat what we want. But we have it all before us, so we may choose any tidbit that we wish to take from it." You see, when you go to someone's house for a special party and no one else shows for whatever reason, they can't give you a portion. They have to serve you the whole thing like they did. You don't have to eat it all. You eat what pleases you and what delights you, and you leave the rest. You're not expected to clean the plate. You're not expected to take the whole turkey. You're expected just to take what pleases you. So, you do. Now, your original purity and integrity says what? I am all. I am worth everything. I am the allness of the universe. I am, I'm trying to find a word that says, I am damn good. I am top dog. I am wonderful. You see what I'm saying? And do you deserve the entire turkey dinner for Thanksgiving? Do you deserve to have the stuffing put out there and the cranberries put out there and all the other wonderful things, the hot buns melted in butter and stuff? Do you deserve to have that? You bet you do. And if the whole thing were not put out there, then you wouldn't be given the whole show. Can you imagine yourself going to the theater and you're the only person in the theater, so the cast decides they're going to give you an abbreviated version of Othello or abbreviated version of The Sound of Music? Ha! Boy, oh boy, who wants an abbreviated version of anything, right? I mean, for you, they'd probably leave out the best parts, you know? For them, they'd probably put in their best parts because they'd like to show them off. But can you imagine Maria not singing up on the hillside saying, "The hills are alive with the sound of music," because that wasn't necessary, you know? You had to get on into the show, you know? Get on into the show where she's living in the convent and stuff like that. But you see, you give it all. And your memory tells you if you're getting it all. Your memory tells you when you're being shortchanged. Because you know exactly what's going on. It's like I often tell to each one of you, you say, "Oh, Herb," I said, "Yes." And then you say, and then you say, and then you say, "And I went around the corner." And I say, "Please, just take me around the corner. Don't give me all of this stuff beforehand. Just take me around the corner. Get me where we're going." But it's necessary for me to tell you that. No, it's necessary for you to tell you that. It's not necessary for you to tell me that. For instance, I went to see my mother. When I went into the house, Mother says, "Oh, Herbie, it's so nice that you've come. Aunt Gussie was just here, and Uncle Bill, and we had such a nice talk, and, oh, and they were just so thoughtful. They left this gift here, and we just had a great time. And then after they left, then Uncle Paul and Aunt Ethel were here, and we had such a nice time, and they were sharing these ideas and that idea. And then your father was here, but he decided he had to go fishing, and so he's off now fishing. And he didn't want to wait and have dinner with you. He felt fishing was more important." Thanks a lot. And so forth, and so on, and so forth. Now, Mother had to say those things to get them off her heart, okay? Did I have to hear them? Would it have been nice if when I walked in the house, Mother would say to me, "Herbie, how wonderful you're here. You're just in time for dinner. Will you have dinner with me?" "Sure, Mom." And she sets the table. And at dinner she says, "It is so nice to have you here. You talk about such fascinating things. What did you do today?" And we talk about it. I say, "Well, Mom, what did you do today?" "Oh, nothing much at all. Until you came, nothing exciting happened at all. It's just so wonderful." Now, she might have fudged a little bit there, but is that what I wanted to hear? Is that what I wanted to hear? Did I want to hear that I'm important in my mother's life? Did I want to hear that coming to visit Mother was something very important to her, that something that she really appreciated? Did I want to hear that she enjoyed having me come? Or did I want to hear all about the uncles and aunts and father who didn't bother to stay and things like that? What did I want to hear? Did I know those other things? Yeah, I know Mother. She's always got a troop coming in and out, and her entourage is extremely grand and wonderful. But what I really wanted to hear was how Mother and I worked together and responded. So in my creation. I create Mother telling me all of these beautiful things about us. Because the other things were totally unimportant. I know these things. I know that Mother is having people in and out constantly, and that she's got visitors at the zoo. And so mentally, I create myself coming into her life at a point where she and I are alone, where we can share. I have a memory. I know. I know that it is just about that time, and everybody else is left to go somewhere else, and that we will be alone. My memory tells me this, my memory of my experiences with it, but more my creation of memory. Return to my original purity and integrity. Now, why am I saying this to you? And I think you're missing it, but I'm going to tell you. Why am I saying this to you? Because I am number one. You see, anything that happens to my mother is totally unimportant. Anything that happens to you guys is totally unimportant. Anything that happens in the world is totally unimportant. Anything that happens at all is totally unimportant. The only thing that's important that happens is what happens to me. Oh, sure, but it's so selfish. No, it isn't. That's what makes the world go round. And I create a very loving world. Okay? So anything that's important is what happens to me. So I create me being number one in my mother's life. I create me being number one in my work relationship. I create me being number one wherever I am. I create me being number one. I create me surrounded by people who love me. I create me surrounded by people who appreciate what I have to say. Yesterday, at the laser doctor's office, Ellen created herself surrounded by people who just love to hear the philosophy of the University of Healing, who love to hear of our positive thinking, who love to hear of her little vignettes of the experiences that she was sharing with them, and they walked away 5 miles tall. And those who were going in for surgery felt so totally at peace, so totally relaxed. They were laughing and giggling out there. I was in the doctor's office having the laser treatment, and I heard them giggling away out there like a bunch of school kids, just having such a good time. Do you know every one of them who went in for their treatment was absolutely perfect? Their operation was a magnificent success. The doctor dealt with them in the most beautiful, wonderful way, because they came in as a bubble of joy, because that's what Ellen created there. But of course, I created Ellen being there doing that. But isn't that wonderful? This is what our life is all about. This is what our world is all about. This is what memory is all about. Memory is living now, eternity. And eternity is both ways, back and front, up and down, in and out and all around. And that's eternity now. All time is now. Eternity is now. And why not live it with all the joy in our heart, with all the peace in our soul, with all the goodness that we are? Why not remember beautifully? Remembering is a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun in the now. And remembering is a happy, happy, happy time. Remembering is a joyous time. It's a time of saying, wow, isn't this a wonderful world we live in? Isn't this a wonderful time we're living in? When you, Stefan and Siddhika, were standing here watching the fire clear off the woodlands around here, and the great smoke flames roaring up here and there, and the fire department out here with all their 50 or 60 fire persons putting out the fire, controlling it. It was exciting, but it wasn't frightening. You had, I'm sure, no fear in you whatsoever, because this was a memory being expressed. This was a joy. You looked out there and you saw all that taking place and you thought, my, my, my. Never once did you think that it would invade our sanctuary, and it didn't. Do you know? You probably didn't notice it. There was no smoke smell in the house. There was no smoke smell in any of the buildings. And if our mind was fearful, smoke smell would have been in the buildings. But you see, you saw that as a cleansing of the area around our sanctuary here, our 80-acre papal Vatican, so to speak. You saw that as a cleansing thing, and it was. And it was beautiful. And following that, we even made some more beautiful things, straightening out our road, blessing everything, putting in a special new road. Everything only got better and better and better and better because your memory returned to your original purity and integrity in all things. And now, as the rains fall, the fields will once again turn lush and green. The trees will be washed of their soot, and as it is, the wind has already swirled along little pathways and said, here's where the pathways are. You never knew that, did you? They were under the bushes. They're so beautiful. But memory is a beautiful thing. It's returning to our original purity and integrity. So I give you this blessing this day. Your memory is now. I love you.